As a writer, I get stuck every so often, straining for the right words to tell my story. Over the years, though, I've learned when to quit tying myself into mental knots over sentence construction, instead stepping back and rethinking where my story is going. This process is essentially what millions of American working families are going through this year, as record numbers of them are shocking bosses, politicians, and economists by stepping back and declaring, "We quit." Most of the quits are tied to very real abuses that have become ingrained in our workplaces over the past couple of decades. Poverty paychecks, no health care, unpredictable schedules, no child care, understaffing, forced overtime, unsafe jobs, sexist and racist managers, tolerance of aggressively rude customers, and so awful much more. Specific grievances abound, but at the core of each is a deep, inherently destructive executive suite malignancy, disrespect. The corporate system has cheapened employees from valuable human assets worthy of being nurtured and advanced to a bookkeeping expense that must be steadily eliminated. It's not just about paychecks. It's about feeling valued, feeling that the hierarchy gives a damn about the people doing the work. Yet, corporate America is going out of its way to show that it doesn't care. And, of course, workers notice. So unionization is booming. Millions who were laid off by the pandemic are refusing to rush back to the same old grind. And now millions who have jobs are quitting. This is much more than an unusual unemployment stat. It's a sea change in people's attitude about work itself and life. This is Jim Hightower saying people are rethinking where their story is going and how they can take it in a better direction. Yes, nearly everyone will eventually return to work, but workers themselves have begun redefining the job and rebalancing it with life. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I tell you, I love Australia. I can't wait to someday go there just so I can meet some of these people who have no fear. Evidently, an Australian journalist asked Sidney Powell, one of the Trump lawyers, point blank, "Do you ever hear yourself and think it sounds ridiculous?" Which I think is brilliant because, you know, especially Sidney Powell. Have you ever listened to her? Totally off the path. Rudy, the same thing. All of them, all of the Trump acolytes, do they actually listen to their own statements? Crazy, crazy stuff. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. My favorite journalist in the whole wide world. I don't know, Sarah Ferguson with this. Do you ever hear something? I think it's up there. But I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come back and share some thoughts. She's a fabulous reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, happy Thursday.
So let's start with Sidney Powell. That's a great question. You ever hear yourself and think, boy, I sound ridiculous? I think that's brilliant.
That's an amazing question. And this whole the thing about, you know, being able to buy videos from Rudy Giuliani, I always really wanted to, you know, do my own little fake interview with Rudy or something, or ask him how to make, you know, how he makes a scotch. I almost had to sneeze. Oh, sorry. The whole thing about Sidney Powell, I think it would be fun if we asked a lot of the trumpets that question. Like, do you hear yourself?
Yeah.
When you hear yourself, like, what is that voice telling you? Do you have any sort of self-awareness? These are, you know, philosophical questions that I feel like a lot of the trumpets, normal people would ask. Maybe the trumpets just don't. Maybe they don't have that kind of brain. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but you know, this is who they are. Going to be fun watching some of them go down, especially Sidney Powell, because she's named in one of the $1.3 billion lawsuits along with Rudy and some of the others. I can't wait for more of that stuff to come out. Let's move along. Susan Collins. Evidently, Susan Collins is a little disappointed. A little sad. She's the one who supported most of the Supreme Court justices who decided that, well, we're gonna kill a woman's right to choose. But she's She's disappointed, Sarah. A little disappointed.
I'm surprised she said disappointed and not concerned, because that was her buzzword for a very, very long time, and is how concerned. And there were like levels of concern based off of the Homeland Security color code. But I feel like this is one of those things where a lot of us were trying to tell Susan Collins, this guy's anti-choice. It's not that he's pro-life. He's like straight up anti-choice.
Yep.
He hates women. He doesn't care about what the actual Constitution says. He lied to you. He lied to the Senate. He lied when he was testifying. And we still don't know who paid his debt off. So I feel like there are a lot of questions that I would have for Susan Collins that are a lot more important than the ones I would have for Rudy Giuliani. But I'm disappointed in Susan Collins and concerned as well. But sadly, she already had her election, and the good people of Maine decided that they bought into her crap. So
yeah, I'm disappointed in the people of Maine.
Yeah, Maine fail.
Yeah. I'm also kind of disappointed in Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who in her dissent wrote, quote, "A majority of justices have opted to bury their heads in the sand." I don't see it as they buried their heads in the sand. I see it as they knew why they were there and they've delivered. This is why they were there. They've given the evangelical crowd exactly what they've wanted. I'm sure this was part of the promise they had to make to Trump. And they got what they wanted. I don't see the head in the sand at all. This is head held up high stuff.
So I have two ways of thinking about this. One is, wouldn't it have been great if she just wrote in her dissent in WTF? You know, like we were all just thinking it.
Yep.
But I wonder if her head in the sand point is that this is not necessarily like they're already going to decide on to get rid of Roe v. Wade using the Mississippi law,
right?
So we knew that was coming to begin with. The thing about the Texas law is there's a whole bunch of stuff in that doesn't even begin to make sense and that doesn't comply with existing laws. So we've talked a lot about HIPAA. Marjorie Taylor Greene is one of her favorite laws. And so this idea that your healthcare is private, that wasn't just a piece of Roe v. Wade. That, you know, HIPAA laws were brought about to ensure that everybody's, documents and everything were protected and that, they didn't get all sent out and, to anybody who asked for it. So how exactly is this going to work with anti-choice people trying to sue you whenever you're medical documents are private? That would be an interesting subpoena because I think that would violate HIPAA laws, right? The next piece of that is the Fifth Amendment, is looking at your health records and requiring you to testify to your own, to whether or not you had an illegal abortion. Isn't that a violation of the Fifth Amendment? So regardless of Roe v. Wade being a precedent, I feel like this isn't just a head in, maybe that's what she meant by the head in the sand thing, that they are just so blinded by their anti-choice, anti-woman bigotry that, they've just completely nullified all of these other laws that have been passed instead of just waiting for the Missouri or the Mississippi law to completely screw over women in that respect.
No, it's an interesting way of looking at it. But, here's the thing. I believe that the people who want to overturn this and want to return women back to the kitchen barefoot, pregnant, and making pie, and I like pie. I'm not complaining about that. But, what they want is control. So they don't want women to have rights of any of this stuff anyway. So I'm perfectly mentally in line with the control that they're willing to go to be able to control women. And I look at this fining system, this snitch system or bounty hunter thing, because I can see it now. I can see Dog the Bounty Hunter sniffing out through garbage bags looking for, who knows, when was your menstrual cycle? We're going to start tracking things. I can see this kind of craziness going on. And more importantly, I think, you know, someone said not too long ago, well, I don't know where they devised this. I know exactly where they devised this. This is the boyfriend. This is the husband. This is the father. This is the male figure going, you're going to do what I tell you and you're not going to have a choice. And now I got the state who's saying, if you don't do what I tell you, I'm going to take you to the state and they're going to give me $10,000.
Which is interesting because these are the same men who are going to be forced to pay for whatever baby the woman has. So what surprises me is that there are not more men who demand abortions because they don't want to pay the child support. That was one of the big points in the whenever Mississippi tried to pass the constitutional amendment a couple of years ago. They ran all of these ads talking about, guess what, boys, you're on the hook for child support if this law passes. And that's
as
exactly
should
what's
going
to happen in Texas. Absolutely, as it should be. The other piece of it is that, a lot of these women who can't afford it or, aren't in a position to have a child, they could just take the kid and hand it over to the dad and be like, see ya, have fun with that. The other thing too is a lot of the folks who, we're obviously in an opioid crisis, and I keep thinking about, people who are doing drugs and who get pregnant. So we may end up with a lot of drug babies or babies that are addicted to drugs. Who is going to raise those kids? How are we going to afford to take care of all of those children? How many anti-choice, so-called pro-life people, who have a whole bunch of adopted children? I mean, they better get ready because that's the world that they've created.
No, I'm right there with you. And I had a listener who emailed me and said, about this and said, hey, why aren't we making all these charges against, conservatives, all of the politicians and all of the people who supported this law? Why don't the Democrats use Texas to use the abortion law against the Republicans? All they need to do is file lawsuit after lawsuit accusing Republicans of driving or assisting one of their relatives. Every Republican has a wife, daughter, niece, or friend who could be seen as going to the clinic when they were at least 6 weeks pregnant. The proof is then on the Republicans. And I'm going, yeah, that sounds like an idea. In fact, people are actually doing it because the Republican, the anti-choice people set up prolifewhistleblower.com, which got slammed with all of these kind of, Mickey Mouse got pregnant or, all this insanity, basically shut their website completely down.
Bummer. I think that's one of those things where you wonder if there's some hacktivists out there who could work on bringing a website like that down frequently.
Yeah. Now I'm not saying they should be
DNS attack.
No, I'm not saying they should spam them. I'm not saying spam prolifewhistleblower.com. I'm not saying that. Don't spam.
And the thing is, there's nothing in that law that says that that reporting something that you know is false is illegal.
Right.
So I think that would be a piece of it that could be interesting. I would love for a blue state to test this law a little bit since the Supreme Court is getting a little snarky. And decide that they are going to mandate vaccines based on this law and allow people to sue others for not getting the vaccine, particularly if you got
like
COVID
it.
From somebody. I think that would end up being the real test there, where the Supreme Court would have to decide, this will apply to abortions, but it's not going to apply to you giving people COVID and killing them.
Now you've written a piece called Texas Will Ultimately Turn Into a Lynch Mob and Vigilante Justice.
This is a literal witch hunt. This is literally a witch hunt.
Isn't that Texas already?
To be fair, yeah.
I mean, because
the interesting thing too is, can these women? Obviously, they can get a gun, and Texas is a stand your ground state. So, can you stand your ground for this? I was making jokes last night where I was like, can you stand your ground with a fetus? Because as any woman who's been pregnant knows, the fetus basically steals all the nutrition from your body because that's what it needs to sustain and grow. So, you know, that's a form of theft. Stand your ground against the fetus.
So basically, and this is really just bad, have Joe Horn standing outside with a shotgun. So when the kid comes out, is this what you're telling me? He shoots it in the back?
Oh, no, just like go straight to the belly with
okay.
it.
Because as I'm reading your article, I'm going, yeah, I see. I remember vigilante Joe Horn. I don't know if you remember him, but you know he was on the phone with the police, going, you know, there're two black guys crawling out of my neighbor's window, and he goes, you know, they're walking down the street, come get them. And he goes, oh, the heck with it, I'm going to go kill those guys. And he walked out, shot them both in the back on the sidewalk. You know, was not in any way threatened and in no way was in danger. He just decided he was going to go out and he was going to take it into his own hand, and he got acquitted.
And how many people out there would be able to claim, you know, oh, I think my neighbor is getting an abortion. I think she's going to get an abortion. I need to kill her. I need to kill her.
Yeah. No, I mean,
you know,
I said something about the Texas Taliban today, and I had someone jump all over me. Oh, you can't say that. You know, I'm going, the Christian Sharia law right here. This is what we're seeing. This is how it starts.
I would say that what I've heard from a lot of Muslim people is that there is nothing. Some of the Muslim women I talked to said that there is nothing in their belief system that says that they could be that you have to be anti-choice or that there's anti-abortion laws. So I would even say that these Texas people are much more conservative than anybody who's Muslim. And, you know, the kind of extremism that is Sharia law isn't far off.
Yeah.
Sharia law is not necessarily, isn't indicative of actual Islam. It's the extremist, crazy, right-wing piece of, you know, these terrorist groups overseas. So, welcome to Texas.
Yeah, we've got our own terrorist groups. And evidently our terrorist groups are going to be having a little powwow here on September 18th. And I've heard, and I'm not sure when it's going to happen, but I hear the former guy is going to announce he's running for president in 2024. Maybe going to do it at the big powwow so we can recreate January 6th in a much more authentic way.
You know, I don't know about that. I honestly don't believe that he would announce this early. And a part of that is because there's a campaign finance law that basically says that the second that you announce that you're running, you can no longer fundraise into any other committees. You can only fundraise into your presidential committee. So there has to be a wall that comes up between Trump and his PAC. What he's been doing lately is raising just buckets of money into his PAC. And, you know, a PAC doesn't have the same kind of restrictions that a campaign presidential committee does.
Right.
So him declaring this early isn't financially, it's not going to get him any extra money. I think if he waits a little bit longer, he could end up making more money off of it. It seems like that's sort of what he's been hinting at whenever he does interviews with people, is he makes up something where he's like, oh, I can't tell you because of campaign finance law, you know, it's illegal. And it's like, no, it's not illegal for you to tell us. It's just that, you know, you can't raise any money. It's politically inconvenient for you. Financially inconvenient.
That actually makes a lot more sense than him jumping into this so soon. So I see it kind of as he's just teasing it so that people start sending him more money.
Yeah, and that's a big part, is that he has a bunch of his friends still have not given him a lot of money. I think a lot of those people are sitting back and kind of waiting to see who's going to run in 2024. And so you look at his campaign finance records and the traditional friends of his, the like big dollar donors that were good at giving to him, they haven't been giving. Most of his money is really coming from the like smaller and mid-level donors, not the, you know, the $50,000, $1 million donors.
Wow. I can't believe that anyone at this point would look at him and say, yeah, we want that guy back. You know, after the years we went through there, you know, after what he did in Afghanistan, seriously, I can't imagine that anybody would want him back. But the weird thing is I have Trump supporters who say, you know, Joe Biden really screwed up getting out of Afghanistan. We should have Donald Trump back. He would have done a better job. I'm going, no, he wouldn't have. That would have been a total cluster.
he tried to bring the Taliban to the United States to Camp David around, you know, 9/11 for a deal to make with them, to be, do some big press conference with them. Who thought that was a good idea? Really? Like, come on. So this whole idea that he's going to run again, I think, too, is a little bit premature. And I think it would, the fun piece of this is, you know, Ron DeSantis has got to run again in 2022. And if he loses, he can't run for president. Or if he could, he's going to be like nobody number one running for president. So he has to win in 2022 if he wants to run for president. So I would love for this like big campaign to start where it's like, oh, Ron DeSantis wants to take away Trump's presidency and, you know, create this sort of fight between the Republican Party because he has better numbers. You know, he has really, really good numbers. Although his approval numbers are tanking, but
Let's talk COVID real quick.
We'll
Florida, evidently Florida, massive spikes. In fact, one of the hospitals in Miami, a nurse was quoted as saying she's never put as many 30-somethings in body bags as she has here recently, because it's not just grandma who's dying from COVID anymore. A lot of the party people, oops, didn't realize they weren't going to make it.
Yeah, we've had, what, like 90% of people over 65 are vaccinated, and the rest of them already died of COVID to begin with.
Yep.
That's a really terrible joke. So the people who are left who haven't been vaccinated and who, you know, can't fight off the Delta variant are people in my age group, people who have young children at home and or new wives or new houses. And basically they're destroying the lives of everybody around them. And I think, you know, I've been kind of saying to folks that like, if you get COVID, the best thing that could happen to you is that you die. The rest of your life is basically you being maimed with breathing problems. And they talk about brain fog from COVID and all kinds of serious issues that people are having. So, I mean, you better be, you know, it could be that you live and things are even worse for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but, you know, I hear people all the time, I had COVID and it wasn't a big deal. I mean, Joe Rogan came out and said he had COVID. They threw the kitchen sink at it. He took the horse dewormer stuff. He took the chloroquine stuff. He took the monoclonal antibodies. He threw everything. You name it, they threw it at him. All of that.
Have you seen the map of Florida? There's like a map that Ron DeSantis shared of all of the places where you can get monoclonal antibodies because it's in such desperate need. The best thing about Rogan, I don't know how he's feeling now or if this is like a thing that happened several months ago or what his deal is, but I guess the good part of it is that we know if he was taking that Evermycin that he was crapping his pants for several days. So
that sounds like fun.
It's fun to make fun of that. You know, if you're gonna take that drug, at least you're gonna have explosive issues in your pantaloons and we'll just laugh at you.
Yeah, but you see, you never hear that part of it. You know, if all the people go, no, I'm going to take this, you know, this horse dewormer without actually thinking, because I had to go look up what it actually does. And as you pointed out, it's supposedly, you know, it cleans you out. Everything.
Well, that's what having worms is about. It's an intestinal issue. So what it does is it basically kills everything that could be living in your gut, including good bacteria. The lining of your intestines, like everything, it is just taking it all out. And then it just causes everything to very quickly explode out the other end. So it kills it all. And so, you know, you'll be very, very lucky if if that's the only thing that happens to you.
Yeah,
there's one story about a lady who was like, who posted in the Facebook message group about Evermycin. Hey guys, I just started taking this today, and I crapped my pants in the grocery store. Is that normal? Karma. That's what I just call karma.
And the thing is you know, you hear that and you go, why didn't you just take the vaccine? Do you know what's in the horse dewormer thing? Do you know what's in all the other stuff? I mean, it seems pretty simple to me.
all of these people who are like, oh, it just hasn't been tested enough, and I don't trust this, you know, this vaccine.
Yeah, but something you can buy off the shelf at Walmart.
You're taking something you got at the Tractor Supply over something that actually has been approved by the FDA. Come on.
You know, it worked well for, you know, for Get Along. It's got to work long for him. Lug Nuts said it'd be okay.
Donald Trump took it, and he seems fine.
See, but here's the thing, and this is the weird thing, because I look at someone like Joe Rogan. He's got enough money to get a good doctor to give him, you know, the right dosage to monitor him so he doesn't, you know, maybe have the explosive stuff and end up taking everything out. It's not like he walked into Tractor Supply and grabbed a handful of you know, horse dewormer things and then washed them down with a sports drink. You know, he had the best medical care money could buy, making sure that he didn't, you know, completely ruin his intestines. So when they say I threw the whole kitchen sink at it, that was under the supervision of, I would hope he's not dumb enough to go, oh, I'm going to do it on my own, under the best supervision of medical care you could get. My problem is all the poor nitwits who are going to listen to him go, see, he took it. So I'm going to take everything. We're going to get the Clorox. We're going to get the light. We're going to get all that stuff.
And we don't even know if what he's saying is true, right? Like,
there's
that's the big thing. If he could just basically have taken the antibodies and, you know, the supplemental oxygen and everything else that he could possibly pump into himself from an actual hospital, and then told everybody, oh, yeah, I'm taking the ivermectin and the hydroxychloroquine. And, you know, it may have been that if he was in the hospital, nobody gave that to him.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is the part that confuses the hell out of me. Joe Rogan's a tough guy. You know, MMA, you know, all of this stuff. Why say you took anything? You're a young guy. You're healthy. I got it. And I kicked its behind. I didn't even take water. I mean, that would see if I'm him, that's where I'm going with it. I'm not going, oh, I got it. And I took the kitchen sink. I don't know, man. I'm struggling with this one.
Maybe he's not smart enough to come up with that.
Yeah,
or maybe he's got, you know, stock and ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Who knows?
No, maybe that's what's paying the $100 million salary. Excellent point. But hey, you know, lots of fun ahead. I can't wait for the coming week. It's been a long week already, Sarah. I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Keep up the fabulous work there at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Again, make sure you check out her work there at rawstory.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Workers in the late 1930s began exerting their recently guaranteed right to organize and join unions. Millions of workers flocked to join the labor organization of their choosing to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and working conditions. Factory, mill, and mine owners, not eager to embrace the changes, fought vehemently to deny workers their rights. As company tactics grew more heavy-handed and brutal, the workers' organizing methods changed. Sit-down strikes became a way for workers to demand their rights and to force management to listen. With a wave of a handkerchief, the tip of a hat, workers would shut down their machines, lay down their hammer, and sit down. Workers at the Hershey Chocolate Factory in Hershey, Pennsylvania, seeking to reduce the 60-hour-long work week, decided to form a union. Initially, an agreement was reached, but as the economy took a downturn, the company willfully violated the agreement by laying off the most senior workers, those who just happened to be the most ardent union supporters. The workers voted to strike the very next day. At 11 a.m. on April 2nd, 1937, a red handkerchief was waved and the workers began the first sit-down strike in Pennsylvania's history. The company reacted by forming the Loyal Workers Club. These strikebreakers consisted of hired thugs from New York City and local farmers, dairy producers, and shopkeepers who were dependent on the factory. On April 6, Hershey organized a loyalty parade. After hours of rallying speeches, the lathered-up Loyal Workers Club mob found pipes and clubs that have been manufactured at the Hershey Planing Mill. The angry mob headed to the Hershey factory to throw their strikers out. Songs of solidarity sung by the striking workers could be heard from inside the factory as the angry mob burst into the plant. Blocking the only exit, the Loyal Workers Club, loyal only to management and greed, began pummeling the workers as they tried to escape. The assault left numerous workers bloody and beaten, many unconscious. Within days, Hershey reopened and recognized a renamed version of the Loyal Workers Club. In May of 1938, the National Labor Relations Board ruled Hershey had violated the law and the company union was dissolved. Soon, the workers joined the Bakery and Confectionery Workers Local 464, who have faithfully represented the workers ever since. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, evidently, the guy who almost attacked Shaquille Barrett Brewster on TV, which I'm like, yo, guy's doing a news report, and some crazy guy just comes out of nowhere and goes after him. Now, we didn't get to see what happened after they cut away, but. Wow, doing on live TV. Well, evidently the guy is from Dayton, Ohio, I guess, is where he was arrested. 54-year-old guy, Benjamin Eugene Dagley is his name. Evidently got kind of a record, evidently by attacking the newscaster. They figured out that he was out of state. When he shouldn't have been, because he was already on probation. So the penalties piling up. But again, angry white guy from Ohio. I guess I'm not surprised. Not surprised. Anyway, we're here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Our good friend, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So your state, a crazy guy from Ohio goes down to Mississippi.
I knew you were going to say your state. I knew it. It's your state, too, kind of, you know.
Yeah, I grew up there.
You're an Ohio product.
They were sane when I lived there.
Right. It was more calm when I was a kid.
What the?
I don't know.
What makes you do that?
He was at a shopping plaza, and then the Gulfport police in Mississippi filed the criminal charge against him when he accosted the reporter, and I guess then he was in Dayton, Ohio when they got him at the plaza, right, disturbing the peace, violating emergency curfew, et cetera, et cetera. U.S. Marshals got him, actually.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is he was already on probation for 5 years, and this happened, but he was involved in an assault, vandalism, all kinds of stuff from 2017. He got 5 years probation, 30 right. days in jail, $5,000 fine, $10,000 in restitution. He had to really screw something up for all that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. He had another potential violation from Cuyahoga County, Cleveland. He had that also. It's unbelievable.
There's a Darwin. There's a Darwin Award participant right there.
Yeah, it's like wow. And you know, somebody like this just keeps going from event to event. You know, from crime to crime. And I guess somebody's lucky that they're not married to him or something.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's crazy the things that you know these people do. All. It's just weird that you would go and do some of this stuff.
Right.
Just weird.
I mean, I wonder if it's a issue with his mind, or is it, you know, did he do drugs, or is he? I mean, when they do something like this, you're like, okay, this is coming from somewhere, you know.
Crazy, crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. Speaking of crazy stuff, evidently Joe Manchin says that he wants to put a pause on the $3.5 trillion budget bill.
You know, when I read the story and when they said that, you know, he wants to composite. I was around for 24 years in office, and I've really never had anyone come to me at any point in time when I chaired committees and said, let's pause that. They will offer ideas, amendments, or say, we're not going to support you, but to say, well, you know, we're going to pause it. It kind of really baffled me. That's kind of a new way to term, take a break, take a vacation from it, what do they want to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things where if your wife tells you we need to pause things, it doesn't end well.
That's right. Or we'll just separate for a while.
Yeah. You know? I got a weekend trip planned. It never ends well.
Right. And then, you know, there was the op-ed that was published in the Wall Street Journal about the path forward for the Democratic leadership and progressives and, you know, and just building everything up to a crescendo, you know. Then he said that he wanted to pause it, and then he said that there would be a suggestion from him. He'd be open to passing a pared-back version of it. So this is what I don't get, Rick. If he wants a pared-back version, that means, very simply, he doesn't want $3.5 trillion. Maybe he wants $3. Maybe he wants $2.5. Maybe he wants $2.2. I don't know. So wouldn't you think that he would simply say, look, to the leadership, this is something, you know, I'm looking at, I would like this figure and what we could fit in there, instead of saying pause.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to, you know, build this up that, you know, the word pause, but the way he's doing this is not going to be, this is a big deal, the way he's doing it. It's not conducive. And now at this point in time, to have any leverage and bargaining position for Senator Schumer, the leader.
Yep. No, he's tying their hands.
He's saying pause. He's not saying, a certain figure.
And as we talked about from the very beginning, this is my fear, that if you don't get the human infrastructure stuff, you don't get the additional stuff that's coming in this bigger plan, I don't see you getting the bipartisan deal either, probably, because I don't know that you're going to get the Republicans in the House to save you.
Oh, no.
I don't know. Do we get nothing?
No, there will be no Republican votes for this infrastructure bill at $3.5 trillion, at $3 trillion. I doubt it at $2 trillion. I doubt it. Here's the other problem. The way the mechanical structure of this bill, because a lot of people say, oh, it passed. No. The numbers passed, let's call them the numbers. It was the budget for the $3.5 trillion. It then was farmed out committee to committee with a price tag. X amount, as you know, went to one committee. X amount went to Health and Human Services. So then September 15th is when the drafts come back. So the committees have been working on putting together, here's our number, here's what we want to do with that economic number. Now, let's say that a committee works out, veterans got $89 billion, so they're working out the language, how do we want to spend it, we do new units for veterans medicine, et cetera. Now, if Senator Manchin comes along and says, oh, okay, you all have been working with that dollar figure, but it's not going to be that dollar figure. Now they've got to retool the entire language process, which... this should have been announced when the $3.5 trillion went through. Any Democrat senator at that point in time should have indicated, Rick, to the leaders that, we don't want $3.5 trillion before it starts through the whole committee process. I mean, if the votes aren't there, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. But my fear is it's not just the big bill. It's also the bipartisan bill that we don't get through, because I don't see any Republicans voting for that either. Because you don't want to give the Democrats a win if you don't have to.
Now that one I am. Oh, you mean on the infrastructure?
Yeah, I mean you've got the $1.2 trillion infrastructure plan,
right.
Which you've got Democrats who are saying, well, if we don't get one, you're not getting the other. You got the progressives saying we want both of them. which is, you know, kind of what that whole fight over the unmovable 10 or 9 or whatever they were to get that deadline for the bipartisan bill.
Well, and then the problem the speaker has now is because she did say September 27th they will have the vote on the infrastructure. And it's sort of without the commitment that the reconciliation bill would pass. So therefore, they may have to bring up the infrastructure bill, and then you may have the bill downed by a combination, a bizarre combination of people.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I said that from the beginning. I go, you know, sadly, I think, you know, the circular firing squad will create an environment where we get nothing at the end of this. And then you go into next year's election cycle going, well, we didn't get any infrastructure done. And then all they're going to be able to run on is the rescue package. And people have already forgotten that.
Correct. Correct. Now, here's the other problem that Senator Schumer will have. This is the problem Mitch McConnell had. This was the problem Bob Dole had. Harry Reid, we can keep going back. And I heard this 100 times when I was in the House. When the Republicans controlled the Senate under a variety of leaders, and they didn't have enough votes to get something, you know, through, but the Republicans controlled the chamber, I would go back home to dinners and events and things, and people would say, you know, and the Republican side, and they would say, you know, we're not supporting them anymore. They're useless, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, the senators would say, well, yeah, but, you know, we don't have enough votes, or two of our senators didn't like what we were doing. People find that hard to accept. And so what I'm saying on the Democratic side, although, you know, no Republicans are helping, I fully understand that, and they won't help, and they'll be obstructionists. But as you know, Rick, amongst the Democrat constituency, they might be saying, yeah, but you've got 50 people and the vice president, and they'll want them to do something. So it's going to be hard for Senator Schumer, if he gets defections, to say, well, it was all the obstructionist Republicans, because it may not turn the base against voting, but it may kind of chill the base on voting, if you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. You look, they ran on infrastructure. They ran on labor law reform. They ran on securing health care. They ran on securing voting rights. They ran on protecting a woman's right to choose. That's what 2020 was about. It was about undoing the horrible of the last 4 years. And, you know, look at what's going on in Texas with voting rights. Look at what's going on in Texas with abortion rights. And now you're not going to get anything on the labor front done. And you're not going to get the infrastructure plan passed. What did you get?
What I don't understand about this, you know, particular story today is the behind the scenes. This is all so important. The $3.5 trillion, or if it's going to be $3 trillion, whatever it's going to be in the infrastructure, they're big deals. And what I just sort of don't get is, how did it get to this point where it then becomes a public issue where Senator Manchin says, oh, I want to pause? Why along the line couldn't there have been, look, stuff's done in privacy out there. You know, you sit and have a lunch and you talk, what do you really want? You know, and then they could have massaged it through that, well, it's not going to be $3.5 trillion, but we're going to do this and have a secondary bill later. I mean, they could have massaged it. This now is out on the diving board. And I don't know how. They have very limited time to get this back on track.
Yeah, I mean, almost no time at all. And the Republican message machine is ramping up, which you already see coming around of, you know, look how bad they did in Afghanistan. They lost us the war. You can already see it.
Well, and it's true now. The Republicans need to be extremely cautious as they're talking about sanction the Taliban today. Look, I'm not saying anybody should support the Taliban, but we have Americans still there. And now is not the time to pass a sanction tomorrow. Okay, it's just not the time. Give it a couple of weeks. Let's, you know, let the system try to do what it needs to do. But putting that aside, you're right. There's still a whole message machine. And then in the end of the day, although the Republicans didn't support anything, well, they did the infrastructure, but they didn't support anything else, they will call it the do-nothing Senate.
Yep, No, and you know, you can already see it.
It's critical, but they'll do it.
And they're screaming about the debt. I saw Kevin McCarthy today said that, you know, the debt is one of the two biggest threats to the U.S. Never mind the fact that he pushed the Republican tax scheme in 2017 that added almost $2 trillion to the debt. Never mind that Trump oversaw almost $8 trillion increase to our debt. But it's the number one. Right now, it's number one.
Well, them bringing this one up, I mean, I would love to be in a Republican primary against a congressman, and they bring up the, you know, we've got to balance the nation's budget. Gingrich, that was the mantra, 1994. I mean, it was the mantra, and he pushed, you know, the balancing, and Bill Clinton signed five budgets that were balanced, you know, et cetera. But for the last 15 years, every Republican has not, they have not voted on budgets. They have voted on, you know, a continuation bill. So for them to say, oh, you know, this is a real problem, well, they have also been part, if you're going to talk about balancing the budget, they have also been part of the problem because they haven't passed budgets
right
in 14 to 15 years.
No, it's crazy. It's crazy. And speaking of McCarthy, I wanted to get your thoughts on the statement he put out the other day. Saying that if companies, you know, comply with the Democrats' order to turn over phone records, that eventually they're going to take power back and they're going to remember. Or how do you put it? A Republican majority will not forget and will stand with Americans to hold them fully accountable. That sounds like a threat to me, Bob.
Well, it was. He threatened technology firms that comply with a riot inquiry. That's what he did. I mean, we've got to really frame this the correct way. Technology firms that comply with an inquiry on a riot, he threatens them. That would be like telling somebody, you've been subpoenaed by the United States Congress, and if you answer that subpoena, I'm going to do something to you. It's the same deal. I was surprised he came out with the verbiage he did on it.
Yeah, but we find out that his phone records are what they're looking for, so I guess I'm not surprised.
Right, right. And they want to look at some of the, you know, allies and see what they said and, you know, what if there was any, you know, type of collusion. But, again, you really just don't normally come out and say don't comply with a congressional request. If you do, I'm going to get you. You know, if you're smart about it, you know, skin the cat another way versus coming out and saying you're going to do it.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
it's pretty brazen.
It is pretty brazen. But again, you know, here's the thing. I mean, you look at January 6th. This was a pretty brazen move. We're gonna stop the certification of a presidential election.
Right.
And look, they're now trying to cover it up. And this is what this looks like to me, Bob. It's a lot of, you know, people say, you know, it's always the crime. You know, you get, the cover up is just as bad. And this is part of it for me.
Right. Right. And they would hold them accountable. I mean, he just used a lot of, like I said, I call it brazen, but maybe it's dumb, you know, to have done this. Potentially, if he would go out against them as a result of that, you know, he might have some ethic problems, you know, with the ethics committee.
Going to be interesting to see how this plays out and what they get. Last question I've got for you. September 18th, I guess it is. Insurrection 2.0, I'm expecting. Do you think the Capitol Police will be more prepared this time if there is a rally that goes off with the Proud Boys and 3%ers and the other terrorist groups?
Yes. Yes, the answer to that one's going to be yes. Extremists are going to attend the rally. They may possibly, you know, put up a fence is what they're saying, but I think that they this time will be prepared. And I don't think there'll be a breach of the Capitol. This time they will be prepared for it.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where you go, you know, maybe prepare like Trump would have prepared for such a thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, have rows of people in their riot gear with their, because it's one of these things. I know people who actually think that they can take on the U.S. military. They actually believe that, you know, we've got all kinds of weapons and we're practicing and that they're going to be able to take on, when the Civil War happens, that they're going to be okay.
Right, right.
You ever did you ever think we would live in a time like this?
No, and having served in the Capitol and having been through, 9-1-1, ricin, and a variety of other things, I never thought I would see what happened on the 6th.
Yeah, excellent point. Excellent point. Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks so much, our good friend Bob Nay. Seriously, wow. The level of crazy. Way up there. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
This day in labor history, the year was 1974. That was the day that President Gerald Ford signed the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. The act was passed over growing concern about the mismanagement of private pension plans in the country. In 1963, the Studebaker Corporation closed its auto plant. Its pension plan was a mess. Nearly 7,000 workers received only 15% of their pension or nothing at all. Across the country, more and more workers were relying on private pensions. In 1960, 21.2 million workers had private pensions. By 1970, the number stood at 30 million. The funds in those pension plans had nearly tripled in that same decade to $138 billion. Ensuring the security of those pensions was essential for millions of workers and the stability of the economy. At the bill signing, President Ford explained, quote, "Dramatic growth in recent years has thrust private pension plans into a central role in determining how older Americans live in their retirement years. Yet, this same growth in pension plans has brought with it a host of new problems. Many workers have ultimately lost their benefits, even after relatively long service, because when they left jobs, they thereby gave up rights to hard-earned pension benefits. Others have sustained hardships because their companies folded with insufficient funds in the pension plan to pay promised pensions. In addition, some pension funds have been invested primarily for the benefit of the companies or plan administrators, not for the workers. It is essential to bring some order and humanity to this welter of different and sometimes inequitable retirement plans within private industry." President Ford signed the bill on Labor Day and outlined minimum standards for private pensions.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm actually thinking about the September 18th insurrection 2.0. Because some of the chatter that I'm hearing, the plans are, we want to show a force. We want to show that, we're going to come back. And there's some people who are going, no, we have to keep it really peaceful because you're going to get crushed if you do something stupid. And that's probably the right instinct. It's probably a smart thing. Because I think about the folks that I've known over the years who, they've fetishized this idea of a civil war. Now that they're going to be able to, they all think they're Rambo. You first time you get a gun, you think, I'm going to be Rambo. I can, I can do all this stuff. And it's like those people, what was the poll? Like 40% of, it was like 40% of the people thought that they could compete with Olympic athletes. And you go, no, you can't. Not even close. But the polling's there. It's the same thing. It's the same people who think, I could last around with, in my day, I could last around with Mike Tyson. No, you can't. Never going to happen. But we build ourselves up. We like to think that we're superior because we keep telling ourselves this. And then we mock kids for getting a participation trophy. That's how it was. It wasn't that way when I was a kid. Everybody I talked to was an all-star. They were the best on their team. They were terrific. They were the everybody. It's amazing how nobody ever stunk at any sports. And it's the same thing here. I mean, you're not going to compete with professional soldiers. I know you have your weekend things. I know there's the, I see the little formations. I hear people going and in practicing. Never going to happen. So can we knock down the Civil War talk just a little bit? Can we just tap that down a bit? Because nobody wants a Civil War. Nobody needs that. There's a small minority. Generally, the people who their lives didn't turn out as they had hoped. They didn't get everything they wanted. And they're angry about it. And look, and they're angry at all the wrong places. You want to be angry at someone? Corporate America. You want to be angry at someone? The CEO class of this country who's done their damn best to make sure that wages go down, benefits go away, and standard of living stagnates. They've done a great job. You got to give them credit. Now, the question is what do we do about it? Not get angry at each other and rip each other to shreds. That's what they want. Crazy times. Let me wrap up with, I think, my favorite story of the day. This is one of those. My kids love McFlurries. Absolutely love them. And every time we go, they go, "Dad, let's go get a McFlurry." And I'm a sucker. I go, "Okay, fine." And then, the McDonald's people bail me out because the damn machine is always broken. We haven't gone since the pandemic kind of opened up, probably end of last year-ish. We haven't gone to one once where the ice cream machine is working. And now, evidently, there is the potential of a Federal Trade Commission investigation into why the McFlurry machine doesn't work. And there's a website, mcbroken.com, which goes through and shows all of the locations, and you can help out, an online map of McDonald's locations in the country that are unable to serve the soft serve ice cream that there's on the menu. They say it's there, but they're McBroken. And they're saying, look, they're saying 11% of chains are experiencing technical difficulty. It says about 20 stores in Massachusetts. I'm going, no, it's got to be way higher than that. Because there's like 100% of it around where I live. But yeah, what they're saying is that in order to fix these damn machines, the people who made them, it's all proprietary. So you have to use their technicians. You can't do it yourself. And it's like, trying to get an appointment. Two, affording them. It's really created this weird. And it's weird that I don't blame McDonald's for their machine now being broken. It's now another company who's screwing people over. And they're screwing another company. And isn't that the best? So ultimately, we the consumers don't get a McFlurry because the proprietary information that the company A has is screwing over company B. And, well, that means kids, no McFlurry. Crazy, crazy stuff. But this is what corporate America gets away with, man. They get away with it because, well, they wrote it in the fine print. Same thing like John Deere had done. You can't even fix your own John Deere. Farmers are losing their mind over because, hey, you got to use an authorized dealer. We definitely need major law reform in this country. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go, wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Make sure to tune in tomorrow for our big panel. Good stuff. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.